Welcome to the Camp Constitution Report and Camp Constitution Radio. Camp Constitution Report is heard on catchingfire.news, and we encourage you to sign up and spread the not just this show, but all the other shows from some incredible hosts like Tom DeWeese and Alex Newman and many others. You can also hear this on WBCQ The Planet every Monday and Thursdays, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and is brought to you by Camp Constitution. And you can visit our website, campconstitution.net, to learn about our incredible week-long family camp and our weekend retreats, our ladies' retreats, and all of the other great information we have available. Well, I'm going to introduce my guest, who is really an old friend. And back in 1989, I literally bumped into him in the old John Birch Society's headquarters in Belmont, Massachusetts. I bumped into him, but I didn't only meet him until about 5 or 6 years later. His name is Jim Perloff. He's the author of about 5 or 6 books, including one, I think, of the most important books written in the last 40 or 50 years. It's called The Shadows of Power, The Council on Foreign Relations and America's Decline. He also wrote one on the evolution issue, evolution versus creation, called Tornado Through a Junkyard. And then he wrote one recent book on COVID-19 and the agendas to come, Red Pilled. And he wrote an update to The Shadows of Power. I think it was self-published. It was entitled Truth is a Lonely Warrior. And he's got another book out about some Christian saints. So, Jim, thank you for coming on the show.
Well, you are an old friend, and thank you for having me back on again. We've had a lot of good times together.
Yes. In fact, I can remember one time you were to be a guest speaker at a JBS event. It was all the executive committee members. And you decided to do a comic routine, you know, jokes, old Soviet communist jokes and so forth. And right. I said, when I introduced you, I said, if you guys like what he's doing, it's because it was my idea. If you don't like it, it was his idea. Well, they all liked it. So anyway, so Jim, tell us a little bit about your background. That's really what I find intriguing. And our producer was of the same mindset. You know, she'd been red-pilled more recently. But you grew up as an atheist and a leftist in beautiful Lexington, Massachusetts.
Yeah, that's right. I grew up in an agnostic home. We didn't pray or go to church, except for a very rare social ulterior motive. And then I got into the hippie movement after I got out of high school, which was 1969. And then, having had a very unhappy youth, I got into the New Age movement, which was this particular cult was very anti-Christian, and I stayed in there for 10 years, from 1972 to 1982. Finally, 1982-83, I came to Christ, and I spent over 30 years in evangelical churches, but recently I felt myself drawn to the more traditional types of services, and I became a member of the Eastern Orthodox Church in 2017, which is the background of my most recent book, just released a couple of days ago as we taped this, called Missing Saints, Missing Miracles.
Also, you've written numerous articles, not just on your blog, but you wrote for the New American Magazine. And by the way, I'm not trying to flatter you, but you have a writing style. When you wrote the book on evolution, Tornadoes from the Junkyard, Refuting Evolution, you didn't write it from a biologist's point of view. You wrote it from a layman's, almost written towards older teenagers. It was written in that style. And you also, The Shadows of Power, it's a story that needs to be told, but it's a very readable book. I mean, every book that you have written, I've read, except for the new one. And it just, you have a great writing style. And I just want to commend you for that, because sometimes you get some of the most informed people in the world, but they can't put their thoughts on paper very well. Well, they do, it doesn't translate so much. But I do encourage anyone listening to this show, either listening or viewing the show, to pick up his books, not to make him become rich and famous. He already is, no, just kidding. But the information is so important. The Shadows of Power, you can get it. Now, do you sell these books on your website, all of them, or just a few of the titles?
I sell all the titles, with the exception of The Shadows of Power, which is, you know, it was published by the John Birch Society under their imprint of Western Islands in 1988. They still have control over that, but I'm sorry to say that the price for a new book on Amazon has went up to $50 a copy, whereas it used to sell for $10.95. Yeah, and now you can't even get a new copy on Amazon. I just checked it today. And the Kindle book, which I was not involved in the conversion of this book to Kindle, but the Kindle copy has gone up from $9.95 to $24.95. I don't understand the logic behind that, because there's no printing cost associated with the Kindle book. You just download it electronically. But but that was my first book. I in the 80s, I heard a lot of talk about the establishment, and which we now call the, more likely called the deep state. But I wanted to put a real face on these people. I didn't want to just nebulously refer to them as the establishment. I wanted to know who they were, because in order to coordinate their policies, which they were clearly doing, they had to belong to some kind of organization. And I think that there's secret societies that go deeper than the Council of Foreign Relations. The Council of Foreign Relations at least had a annual report that listed its members. And what I did in my book was I showed that you went through Truman, Eisenhower, Kennedy, through Johnson and Ford, and Nixon.
You was published in 88, so you'd have Reagan
Reagan. I went through Carter and Reagan, and I showed that through every administration, they were drawing their cabinet members for the Council on Foreign Relations, which helps explain why there was actually only cosmetic changes when we flipped from Democrat to Republican, back to Democrat. We see this even on a broader scale nowadays worldwide with Klaus Schwab and his World Economic Forum, which we now see that global leaders like Justin Trudeau and Tony Blair and Angela Merkel and Jacinda Ardern, Bill Gates, they've all been through, Gavin Newsom too, have all been through Klaus Schwab's World Economic Forum, Young Global Leaders Program in Davos, Switzerland. And I'm drawing this comparison because it does compare to what the Council of Foreign Relations was doing domestically in the United States, controlling our presidential cabinets. Now, on a global scale, the World Economic Forum is doing that globally. Klaus Schwab has boasted that he's providing cabinet members around the world. He boasted he's provided more than half of Justin Trudeau's cabinet. So, and Klaus Schwab is not an elected leader, you know. So these are unelected leaders.
He's not even from North America. Yeah. Now, in 1988, most people who were informed about the New World Order, or some people refer to it as the conspiracy now, the deep state, we would look at major characters like David Rockefeller, Henry Kissinger, Zbigniew Brzezinski, just name a few, maybe George Shultz. Most of those guys have gone. Henry's still around, but he's not getting around very well. He's in his 90s. Who would be some of the key players today?
Well, I would certainly have to put Klaus Schwab at the top of that list, running the World Economic Forum. And, of course, George Soros has incredible control. Bill Gates has really taken command of the pandemic response, even though he's not a scientist or a medical doctor. Nobody ever questions that when he goes on mainstream media. We're actually living in an era, you know, back in 1983, there were 50 corporations that controlled the media in America. Now it's down to five. It was six, but then when Viacom consolidated with CBS, it became five, controlling almost all the media. And, you know, on my website, I have a post that I show not only newscasters reading off the teleprompter the exact same words verbatim.
Same dialogue,
but I even have a video on my blog post about the World Economic Forum showing that even political leaders speak verbatim, whether they're declaring a war or asking their parliament for intervention in war. talking about Build Back Better. You'll see in my post about the World Economic Forum that Hillary Clinton, Justin Trudeau, Jacinda Ardern, Greta Thunberg, and Prince Charles, and so many other people say Build Back Better, which according to the internet was a phrase invented by Klaus Schwab. So they're all saying the exact same thing. It's just uniform, and this is why people need to get out of that box of the mainstream media where they're
also
saying the exact same thing all the time.
The term insurrection, that was started to be used. I remember I was flew on September 11th, I'm trying to think of the year, 2001. Mm-hmm. And I remember I was spending a week, I ended up going to Ohio for the week, and I remember hearing, things will never be the same. Everybody's repeating it. America has changed after this. It will never. And everybody was saying it, even people in my church. I said, where did you hear that? I said, gee, I must have heard it on the news. Everyone was saying that. And I had a reporter. I wasn't the major figure being interviewed at the time, but it was a reporter from the Washington Post. And this was right after the January 6th issue. And she used the word insurrection. And I said, let me ask you, where did you come up with that word? And she couldn't tell me. And I hear this word insurrection. I said, a riot happened. There's no question that it was stuck out of control. An insurrection is sort of like usually an armed attempt to overthrow a government. So how can you use the word insurrection? Or they use the word big lie because you didn't agree that you said, gee, I think maybe there was some irregularities in the election of 2020 and even in maybe 2022. And even when you had evidence, it showed it was called the big lie. And anyone promoting the big lie would be, of course, banished from a polite company. And it's interesting, we had you speak at our Lane House on this issue, COVID-19. This book came out last year, right? It came out when the lockdown was still pretty vibrant.
2020.
And we uploaded the video on YouTube, and within about 2 or 3 days, it said that can't put it up there because it's not consistent with the CDC and the WHO or something like that. And then we had Shiva, you know, Shiva. Spoke, it was before the lockdown. It was actually a day before the lockdown. He spoke at the Lane House on a Saturday, maybe 2 days before the lockdown. And the same thing happened. Of course, this one, it was up a little bit longer, you know, maybe a couple of years. And they just take it right down because it's not something we want. So there's really no free speech does exist, but it's only on formats like this. You're not going to be able to speak about this on major media outlets. And also, you know, we have our sitting president, who's a stumbling, I don't know what the right word for him is, but he's definitely not competent. But the average person doesn't know that. They think he's just a great guy. Oh, he likes to eat ice cream. That's kind of cool. They don't, they've seen some of his angry speeches, but they haven't, they don't know that he's basically not competent. And then Pennsylvania just elected this guy to be a senator who had a stroke and can't string maybe two sentences together, and it's almost an embarrassment. He got elected, and I don't think the average voter knew his background, and many other examples of this. You know, the Hunter Biden laptop, New York Post had an article about it. It should have been enough to change the votes of a lot of people. This guy, this president, has doing business with communist China and Ukraine and Russia, and his son is the user as the bag man. That's not in the best interest of this country, yet most people don't even know anything about this.
Right. You know, this goes back many years. You know, I have, before Gary Allen came out with his book, Then They Call It Conspiracy, which, you know, changed my life in 1978. In 1937, we had Ferdinand Lindbergh writing this book, America's 60s Families, 1937.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, and he demonstrated that. He had chapters on how the America's wealthiest 60 families controlled the major industries. He had one called The Press of the Plutocracy, showing that they owned the media. He demonstrated how they had pre-selected presidential candidates before the nominating conventions. And this is back in 1937. It's only gotten much worse since that time, Hal.
Well, you mentioned in Shadows of Power that there was a meeting that took place right after World War One, and I forget who the major figure was, but he basically asked the question, how are we going to be able to control the the media, and they said, well, we don't have to buy the newspapers, we just have to own the editorial content and choose the editors of these major newspapers. And they did.
Yeah, I had a quote from the Congressional Record on that, that they had bought up the 25 biggest newspapers in America. You know, one thing that Lundberg brought out was in 1933, you know, America was in a depression, and there'd been a stock market crash, and Wall Street was investigated by Congress. It was called the Pecora hearings, and they subpoenaed the tax records of a lot of rich people. And what they found out, Hal, was that the 17 partners of J.P. Morgan and Company had not paid a single penny of income tax in 1932 or in 1931. Well, the American people should have been outraged because the average Joe was paying, you know, income tax. But why didn't they find out? It's because J.P. Morgan and Company had bought control of the 25 largest newspapers, and they picked the editors, and they didn't want anything embarrassing. That's why people have to understand that just because you don't hear something on MSNBC or CNN, that doesn't mean it's not true. People who are inside that box, the mainstream media, which is so bought up and controlled, far more so than in Lundberg's day, they have to step outside that box and independently evaluate the situation. You know, sometimes people say to me, who are skeptics, they say, well, you just believe all the conspiracy theories. No, that's not true. I read what the mainstream media says. I know what the mainstream media is saying, same as they do. The difference is that I also hear what the alternative viewpoint is. It's like in a courtroom. If you just heard the prosecutor, you would think that the defendant was guilty. Or if you just heard defense, you'd think the defendant is innocent. Well, most people today, they're just hearing one side of the story. They never hear the other side. But you guys like you and me, we understand what the mainstream media is saying. We also understand and evaluate what alternative news sources are saying.
Well, I think one of the saving graces of our country is that the mainstream media is being rejected. The daily hard copy newspaper is just about done. I mean, I picked up it because they had an article about Camp Constitution in the Boston Herald, so that's why I bought a copy just for a souvenir type of thing. And you're paying $2 or $3 for 20 pages and half of them are advertisements. I said, there's nothing in here anymore. And I think it's outlets like CatchingFire.News, which is relatively new, Frank Speech, and podcasts. Look at Joe Rogan. This guy, and again, I don't necessarily agree with everything Joe Rogan says, but he has a podcast. He gets 10 million views per podcast. And that's really hard to overcome. If he interviews somebody on COVID, and he does, you know, it's interesting too, the new format is like 5 to 10 minutes tops for any video. And he's on there for 5 hours interviewing people. They're having a talk fest, and it's a very, very popular format. So I think that's one reason why we do have some more informed people, because they're rejecting the mainstream media. However, during the COVID, how many people were just so panicked? It was just mind-boggling. People running around in desperate fear. I said they still have that stranglehold on this country and around the world. That's why it's so important for us to get your information out and the things that we do, and just have a bigger format. And it can be done. I mean, it's an ongoing thing. I know one of the topics you wrote about quite extensively was Pearl Harbor, and it's coming right up, the anniversary of December 7th of the attack at Pearl Harbor. Mm-hmm. And that was another example of a whitewash. So talk a little bit about that.
Okay. Well, Pearl Harbor was, there are three basic things to know about it. The first is that Franklin D. Roosevelt placed the fleet in Pearl Harbor against all naval advice. The fleet commander at that time, J.R. Richardson, specifically protested moving the fleet from San Diego to Pearl Harbor in Hawaii because, you know, in Hawaii you'd have to supply the fleet over 2,000 miles. And all the ships would be boxed in like sardines. And Pearl Harbor was subject to attack from 360 degrees in Hawaii. It was a terrible place to put the fleet. And Admiral Richardson was fired by Franklin D. Roosevelt for protesting this move. Okay, the second thing to know is that the United States provoked the attack on Pearl Harbor. And how did they do that? Well, they put a stranglehold on Japan with an all-out trade embargo. Japan was dependent on imports for 88% of its oil, 75% of its food, and together with the British and the Dutch, we were strangling Japan, and the Japanese did everything they could to negotiate their way out of this. They said, look, we're demanding they pull all their troops back into mainland Japan, which you can imagine how our reaction would be if somebody told the United States to that, to do that today. They said, listen, we'll pull all our troops back into Japan, but we have to maintain a foothold right across the ocean on mainland China, because communism has taken over Russia, and we foresee that communism is going to take over China. We don't want us to be facing both communist China and communist Russia. Well, the United States refused to accept that proposal, and that was what led to the final Japanese decision to hit Pearl Harbor, which conveniently Roosevelt had set up for attack. The third thing to know is, and this is documented in so many books, there's an article on my website, it's called Pearl Harbor, Roosevelt's 9/11, where we document all of this, but Roosevelt had full foreknowledge of the attack on Pearl Harbor. We'd cracked Japan's diplomatic code, which is called the Purple Code, and when we translated it, we called it magic, but we knew to the day when they were going to attack Pearl Harbor. And we also knew this through, this was not revealed until more recently, through Robert Stinnett's Freedom of Information Act request, that we also had broken their naval codes as well. So we knew fully well that the Japanese would attack us, but we gave no warning whatsoever to our commanders in Pearl Harbor, Admiral Kimmel and General Walter C. Short. So that's, one example of many we could give where America's soldiers and citizens have been betrayed by people in our government whose loyalties are not to the American people, but to the oligarchs who run our country for their own purposes.
The Lusitania, then you had Tonkin Gulf, which was a precursor to justify the Vietnam involvement, and many others. Well, let's just touch base. We got about maybe 7 minutes left. You wrote this great book called Tornado Through a Junkyard, and I guess that was you, the topic of the book was quoting a biologist from England, that the probability of evolution from mud up into a man is like a tornado going through a junkyard, leaving in its wake a 747. So talk a little bit about what motivated you to do. And you also wrote a book on, a smaller book on the evolutionist there, Darwin.
They're both on Darwin. Tornado in a Junkyard is a lengthy book, over 300 pages long, with almost 700 endnotes. And The Case Against Darwin is a smaller book for people who don't have enough time for a long one. But basically, Darwin was interested in attacking Christianity. I don't know if I'm going to take a quote right here. Let me quickly see if I do. Got right in front of me. But Darwin said that his theory of evolution was a slow and silent side attack on the Bible. That's how he characterized it in 1873. You know, it was very unpopular to attack Christianity in the 19th century. So what Darwin did was, rather than attack Christianity directly, introduced a theory that would say that life began without a creator. And he hypothesized that life began in ancient pond, when the chemicals randomly came together and formed the first cell. But this is absurd. We've never, science is supposed to be based on observation. We've never observed cells coming together to form a cell. A cell actually has thousands of proteins, which are based each on hundreds of proteins, and you have to deal with genetic code and DNA beneath that. And actually, Sir Francis Crick, who co-won the Nobel Prize for discovering DNA, said the chances of getting one protein by chance, let alone the thousands you need for a bacterial cell, would be 1 in 10 to the power of 260, which is mathematically impossible. And furthermore, if a cell was formed by chance, in the course of its lifetime, before it died, this first cell would have had to completely develop and perfect the process of cellular reproduction, because if it didn't, there never would have been a second cell. Now, Darwin never went into any of this, and your modern Darwinists don't get into this. There's so much other evidence, which I cover in the books, but once Darwin had established himself as primary primary source for how life originated. This opened the door for attacks on Christianity, which began in the 1890s with the Rockefellers founding the modernist movement, which said that the Bible was not true, there were never any miracles. And on the other side of the aisle, the fundamentalists, who said the Bible was true, were unfortunately hijacked by the Rothschilds and the Scofield Reference Bible, which Zionized the churches. And I was in those kind of churches for a long time. And finally, I had to get them out of there. That's one of the reasons why I turned to Orthodoxy. But that's sort of in a nutshell. Darwin's theory was not a science that was observable, repeatable, testable, or provable like physics and chemistry. It was simply speculations about what happened in the past. But Darwin pulled a fast one, and he tried to put it in the same category as sciences like physics and chemistry.
It's amazing how much damage this evolution has caused. And you mentioned in the book that Stalin was going to be he was going to be a priest, Orthodox priest, and
right.
he read Darwin, and he left the church, and of course the rest is history. I think Hitler was of the same mindset. And not to say that, and you qualify this, not everybody who's an evolutionist is necessarily a mass murderer, but that was the basis of a lot of negative and evil things. And I think a lot of the churches just didn't want to deal with it, and they just went along with this divine evolution, you know, the Earth's billions of, even though the first, to me, if you can put the first sentence of the Bible, if you could question that, everything else is up for grabs. If you say, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, in the beginning isn't a baseball term, you know. It's the beginning of a man's time, and so But books like yours and that Creation Museum in Kentucky, which I visited, mm-hmm. and many other, I think is a big help because it gives us evidence and ways to defend our position. I think we just got a couple of minutes. Yeah, we got 2 minutes. So let's talk about your latest book. Show us the cover of it and. We got 2 minutes, so give me a two-minute promotion of this book.
Okay, well, it's called Missing Saints, Missing Miracles. And as I say, I became Orthodox in 2017. We're not Catholic, but we're probably closer to Catholics than any other denomination that's out there right now. The most venerated saint of the Orthodox Church in the 20th century is probably St. Paisios, who lived on a humble hut on Mount Athos in Greece. And he recommended reading for the lives of the saints every day. And I said, well, that sounds like a pretty good idea. I've heard of the lives of the saints. So I picked up one volume of the lives of the saints, and this is what they look like. I read it, and I was stunned by what I was reading. I was amazed at the church history that was omitted from my knowledge of Christianity, and I was also amazed by the miracles that Jesus had predicted would be done. You know, Jesus said that the works that I do, believers shall do also. Verily, verily, I say to you, he that believeth in me, the works that I do, he shall do also. You know, when I was at evangelical churches, they said the miracle stopped after the Book of Acts, or no more. I found that throughout history, from Ireland to Greece to Russia, the same miracles Jesus did, from changing water into wine, to stopping plagues, to raising the dead, to healing blind and lepers, stopping storms. These were done by the saints, but the saints all had one thing in common, Hal. They walked a rigorously narrow path of obedience to Christ. There was never one saint that said, hey, Jesus paid it all. These miracles were not done. People, these were not casual Sunday churchgoers. These were people who truly, truly overcame their passions that we would call the seven deadly sins in the West, and denied self. And it was only those people that did miracles. But there were many miracle workers. Even walking on water, I give about 8 examples in the book of saints who worked on. And by the way, for Catholics out there, my book, half of the saints in the Orthodox Church are the same as the Catholic Church, because in 1054 AD, it was the same church. It wasn't until after that split that you had a divergence. So the main point of the book, and what I'm trying to drive home to you, is that there's more history about Christianity that people don't know, thanks to Martin Luther's rule of sola scriptura, nothing but the Bible should be believed, and also that miracles really did happen after the Book of Acts for many centuries, but always by people who follow the narrow path of Christ. America wants miracles, which we definitely need now, we need to walk that narrow path. That's essentially the message of the book.
All right. Well, so how can we're running out of time? So how can people learn more about you and your writings?
Well, I think I've got on your screen there. It says jamespriloff.net. That's my website, and my book is on Amazon. Right now, it's actually ranked number 2 in Christian Orthodoxy as we take this on Amazon. But that's largely due to my promotion of the book, so I can't take much credit for that.
Well, a few of the viewers, but I'll get a copy too. Yeah. Even though I'm a born again Christian, I do respect other positions, and I think one of the best books I've read on the subject of the Christian Church was Tom Wood's book, How Catholicism Built Western Civilization, and I recommend that book as well. So anyway, thanks for being a guest on short notice, and thank you for listening and viewing. You've been listening to Camp Constitution Radio and watching the Camp Constitution Report on CatchingFire.News. Until next week, may God richly bless you.